These later Paleolithic people not only drew remarkably well for our information, and with an increasing skill as the centuries passed, but they have also left us other information about their lives in their graves. They buried. They buried their dead, often with ornaments, weapons, and food. They used a lot of colour in the burial, and evidently painted the body. From that one may infer that they painted their bodies during life. Paint was a big fact in their lives. They were inveterate painters. They used black, brown, red, yellow, and white pigments, and the pigments they used endure to this day in the caves of France and Spain. Of all modern races, none have shown so pictorial a disposition. The nearest approach to it has been among the American Indians. These drawings and paintings of the later Paleolithic people went on through a long period of time and present wide fluctuations in artistic merit. We give here some early sketches from which we learn of the interest taken by these early men in the bison, horse, ibex, cave bear, and reindeer. In its early stages, the drawing is often primitive, like the drawing of clever children. Quadrupeds are usually drawn with one hind leg and one foreleg, as children draw them to this day. The legs on the other side were too much for the artist's technique. Possibly the first drawings began as children's drawings begin, out of idle scratchings. The savage scratched with a flint on a smooth rock surface and was reminded of some line or gesture. But their solid carvings are at least as old as their first pictures. The earlier drawings betray a complete incapacity to group animals. As the centuries progressed, more skillful artists appeared. The representation of beasts became at last astonishingly vivid and like. And even at the crest of their artistic time, they still drew in profile, as children do. Perspective and the foreshortening needed for back and front views were too much for them. They rarely drew themselves. The vast majority of their drawings represent animals. The mammoth and the horse are among the commonest themes. Some of the people, whether Grimaldi people or Cro-Magnon people, also made little ivory and soapstone statuettes, and among these are some very fat female figures. These latter suggest the physique of Grimaldi rather than of Cro-Magnon artists. They're like bushmen women. The human sculptor of the earlier times inclined to caricature, and generally such human figures as they represent are far below the animal studies in vigour and veracity. Later on, there was more grace and less coarseness in the human representations. One little ivory head discovered is that of a girl with an elaborate coiffure. These people at a later stage also scratched and engraved designs on ivory and bone. Some of the most interesting groups of figures are carved very curiously round bone, and especially round rods of deer bone, so that it's impossible to see the entire design altogether. Figures have also been found modelled in clay, although no Paleolithic people made any use of pottery. Many of the paintings are found in the depths of unlit caves. They're often difficult of access. The artists must have employed lamps to do their work, and shallow soapstone lamps in which fat could have been burnt have been found. Whether the seeing of these cavern paintings was in some way ceremonial, or under what circumstances they were seen, we're now altogether at a loss to imagine. At last it would seem that circumstances began to turn altogether against these hunting, newer Paleolithic people who had flourished for so long in Europe. They disappeared. New kinds of men appeared in Europe, replacing them. These latter seemed to have brought in bow and arrows. They had domesticated animals and cultivated the soil. A new way of living, the Neolithic way of living, spread over the European area, and the life of the reindeer age and of the races of reindeer men, the later Paleolithic men, after a reign vastly greater than the time between ourselves and the very earliest beginnings of recorded history, passed off the European stage. Second, it was about 12,000 or fewer years ago that with the spread of forests and a great change of the fauna, the long prevalence of the hunting life in Europe drew to its end. Reindeer vanished. Changing conditions frequently bring with them new diseases. There may have been prehistoric pestilences. For many centuries, there may have been no men in Britain or Central Europe. For a time, there were, in Southern Europe, drifting communities of some little-known people who were called the Azilians. They may have been transitioned generations. They may have been a different race. We don't know. Some authorities incline to the view that the Azilians were the first wave of a race which, as we shall see later, has played a great part in populating Europe, the dark, white, or Mediterranean, or Iberian race. These Azilian people have left behind them a multitude of pebbles, roughly daubed with markings of an unknown purport. The use or significance of these Azilian pebbles is still a profound mystery. Was this some sort of token writing? Were they counters in some game? Did the Azilians play with these pebbles, or tell a story with them, as imaginative children will do with bits of wood and stone nowadays? At present we are unable to cope with any of these questions. We'll not deal here with the other various peoples who left their scanty traces in the world during the close of the new Paleolithic period, the spread of the forests, where formerly there had been steppes and the wane of the hunters some 10,000 or 12,000 years ago. We'll go on to describe the new sort of human community that was now spreading over the northern hemisphere, whose appearance marks what's called the Neolithic Age. The map of the world was assuming something like its present outlines. The landscape and the flora and fauna were taking on their existing characteristics. The prevailing animals in the spreading woods of Europe were the royal stag, the great ox, and the bison. The mammoth and the musk ox had gone. The great ox, or aurochs, is now extinct, but it survived in the German forests up to the time of the Roman Empire. It was never domesticated. It stood 11 feet high at the shoulder, as high as an elephant. There were still lions in the Balkan Peninsula, and they remained there until about 1000 or 1200 BC. The lions of Württemberg and South Germany in those days were twice the size of the modern lion. South Russia and Central Asia were thickly wooded then, and there were elephants in Mesopotamia and Syria, and a fauna in Algeria that was tropical African in character. Hitherto, men in Europe had never gone farther north than the Baltic Sea or the British Isles, but now the Scandinavian Peninsula and perhaps Great Russia were becoming possible regions for human occupation. There are no Paleolithic remains in Sweden or Norway. Man, when he entered these countries, was apparently already at the Neolithic stage of social development. Third, nor is there any convincing evidence of man in America before the end of the Pleistocene. The same relaxation of the climate that permitted the retreat of the reindeer hunters into Russia and Siberia as the Neolithic tribes advanced may have allowed them to wander across the land that's now cut by Bering Strait and so reach the American continent. They spread thence southward age by age. When they reached South America, they found the giant sloth, the Megatherium, the Glyptodon, and many other extinct creatures still flourishing. The Glyptodon was a monstrous South American armadillo, and a human skeleton has been found by Roth, buried beneath its huge tortoise-like shell. All the human remains in America, even the earliest, it's to be noted, are of an Amerindian character. In America, there doesn't seem to have been any preceding races of sub-men. Man was fully man when he entered America. The old world was the nursery of the sub-races of mankind.